Dr. Scott Allen has spent years looking at the medical care that prisoners receive while they are incarcerated, both in Rhode Island and now in California, where he is professor of medicine at UC Riverside. Dr. Allen, welcome to Sound Medicine.
Thank you.
Now, you spent several years working in correctional facilities in Rhode Island. How would you characterize the health care that inmates received in prison?
Well, the health care that inmates receive in U.S. prisons is a mixed picture. On the one hand, over the last 30 years, there have been dramatic improvements in the quality of care for U.S. prisoners, owing to a combination of strategic litigation and also efforts by well-motivated professionals to improve the quality of care in these institutions. So there have been significant improvements over the last several decades. At the same time, as the results of ongoing litigation demonstrate, it's still a highly mixed picture. Probably the biggest example of a failure to meet a constitutional standard in a large state would be California, which was found in 2011 not to be meeting that standard by a relatively conservative U.S. Supreme Court.
You know, folks who become incarcerated tend to have higher risks of certain physical and mental health problems. Can you talk about the health problems that they face?
Certainly. So, not surprisingly, the population that fills U.S. prisons and jails comes from largely at-risk populations for chronic disease. And actually, across the spectrum, we see higher rates of common disorders such as diabetes, asthma, and other conditions. But there are several categories that really are overrepresented. The first area is infectious disease, things like HIV and hepatitis C, which are seen at much higher rates in the incarcerated population. And secondly, in the area of mental health, the chronically mentally ill are also disproportionately represented in U.S. jails and prisons. And finally, those with chronic addiction are disproportionately represented among the imprisoned population.
Mm-hmm. And what happens to the people who have infectious disease and addiction and mental health issues while they're in prison? Do they get better, or does being incarcerated exacerbate some of their problems?
So in general, even though I described a mixed picture, I think during the period of incarceration, inmates do have the opportunity to come into contact with a healthcare infrastructure. And as I've said, depending on your setting, it could be very good, it could be adequate, or it could be inadequate. But at least it's some interaction with a healthcare infrastructure. And often these same patients, when they're in the community, historically have not had access to care. So in general, at least it provides the opportunity to diagnose conditions, maybe start treatment, maybe stabilize. In the case of addiction, depending on the facility, there's relative sobriety. Obviously, drugs do get into prisons, but for the most part, less than would be available in the community. So in general, in the short term, there can be improvements in health. The problem, of course, is that most people don't stay in prisons forever, and that the vast majority rotate back into the community.
And that's where the Affordable Care Act comes in, and the counties and the states are signing up their prisoners for Medicaid. And as I understand it, the state pays now, and so if you sign them up for Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, you kind of shift the burden onto the federal government. Is that a correct assessment?
That's partially true. Of
course,
Medicaid being co-funded by states and the federal government, whereas prisons, at least the state prisons, are funded entirely by, at least the health care is funded entirely by the state. So there is some cost shifting that occurs. There's two ways the Affordable Care Act might have impact on the budgeting of health care and access to health care in this population. I think you alluded to one when you talked about the fact that prisons are looking at using new opportunities made available by the Affordable Care Act to get reimbursement for care they currently provide. I should note for your listeners that historically, all care provided in prisons was typically self-insured. The state prisons simply paid the bills for every cost of medical care without going through an insurer. As the vast majority of people who end up in prison historically were not covered by insurance, and had they been covered by a government program, it lapsed as soon as they hit the door of the prison. Under the Affordable Care Act, there will be new opportunities both through public programs, but also in some cases by people who secure private insurance through the exchanges. to potentially seek reimbursement through those programs while people are incarcerated. So that's one way the Affordable Care Act may have impact on correctional health. Probably just as important is new opportunities for people with chronic illness leaving prison now potentially being able to secure insurance coverage where, again, historically they have not been able to. Historically, people who have been incarcerated were not eligible for a number of the public programs and rarely were in a position to be able to afford third-party insurance on the private market. So, and that's important because a very high-risk period, both health-wise and in terms of recidivism, comes as people with chronic illness leave jails and prisons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that why taxpayers should care about whether or not these prisoners who are now locked away get adequate care for their mental and physical problems, and more specifically, once they get out, are eligible?
Well, just thinking of it just from a public policy and a fiscal policy point of view, taking a population or a subset of the U.S. population that's highly affected by a variety of chronic illnesses and trying to address those illnesses in the most cost-effective way should be of interest to everyone. It's tempting to think of the jail and prison population as an isolated population that's locked away and it's sort of someone else's problem. But as you alluded to, the vast majority of people who are incarcerated at any time return to the community. Let me just give you a number to sort of illustrate that point. On any given day in the United States, there's between 2 and 2.5 million people incarcerated at any given moment. But in the course of a year, about 10 million people rotate through jails and prisons. So you see the majority of people who have come into contact with the criminal justice system are actually out in the community.
Okay. So the benefit of having Medicaid coverage then, once these prisoners get out, I mean, what will this mean in terms of public benefit? Because I would imagine if they didn't have anywhere to go, they'd be showing up maybe at the emergency room in dire need. Or like you said, if they have addiction issues or mental health issues and they leave prison with only a month's worth of medication, that would spell out trouble on month two.
You're absolutely correct that there's even immediate benefits we can see potentially from providing health care coverage. And so if you take a step back, there's another way we should be looking at it, both as citizens and certainly the medical community and the public health community. And it's to remind ourselves that over that same past 30 years that I talked about earlier, we've seen a rapid increase in the incarceration rate in the United States to historically unprecedented levels. To me as a physician, one of the interesting and disturbing things about that trend is it was largely driven by people with two categories of illness that I've mentioned already, mental illness and addiction. So as a doctor, it intrigues me that one of the contributing factors to the rise in the rate of incarceration is undertreated medical illness. Not the sole cause, but a contributor. And so again, both in terms of human terms, but also economic and public policy terms, it makes sense to provide the care in the community and potentially improve outcomes and avoid more costly solutions down the road.
Well, Dr. Scott Allen, it was a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for your interest in the topic.
Dr. Scott Allen is Professor of Medicine and Associate Dean for Academic Affairs at UC Riverside School of Medicine.